Blog Talk Radio.
Having the show today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
You're one of the most interesting characters, and that extends to you inside the ring as well. I mean, Tim Boetsch is a dangerous and unpredictable fighter. There's no question about that. And that's a recipe which pleases the fans and makes for exciting fights. We've been looking forward to talking to you about your career to date for a while, so we're happy to have you on the show. I'd like to ask you, first off, what is a Boetsch? I know that sounds like a caption of one of those funny cat pictures, but I'm curious as to what a Boetsch means. What's the origin of that surname?
It comes from Germany. My family, as far as I know, all the Boetsches that I know, sort of carry that barbarian-esque manner with them. So. Coming up with a fight name was a pretty easy thing for me to do. I grew up in a family where hunting and outdoor sports were a huge part of what we did, and I think that carries over into everything I do. Very hardworking, always looking to finish things, and that's just what I do.
Yeah, it's definitely a good name for someone with your appearance, demeanor, and fighting style. I mean, there's no question about that. And all those things seem to have come together in a way that means you basically were left with only the option of doing something tough for your career. I mean, people and even society might reject Tim Boetsch, the flower arranger, just because it subverted their expectations too much.
Exactly. Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, I mean, is that something which runs in your family, the toughness gene? I mean, I've read elsewhere that you have a brother who's also a wrestler, and it sounds like it's a family trait.
Yeah, my brother, he was definitely my hero growing up. He was a wrestler. He early enlisted to go into the Army, and he retired after serving for 23 years. So he's definitely a battle-hardened individual, and my dad is in the Navy, so there's a military background and that in the family. But, that's just kind of the people we are. We work hard and we fight hard, and, we also have fun. So the Boetsches are, I'm glad to be a part of that family.
Yeah, your brother is quite a bit older than you, isn't he? I mean, that must have been, I guess because I have older siblings as well. But,
My brother's 10 years older than I am, so I had to get tough pretty quick as a kid. I took some beatings early on and learned how to give them back pretty quick.
Exactly. I bet nobody messed with you in grade school since you had a brother who could already probably drive and buy cigarettes.
That's right.
Now, I know that you were a super hot high school wrestler in terms of your record. I mean, you really did well. Can you talk a bit about how you went from basically admiring your older brother's wrestling ability to developing your own?
Yeah, as early as I can remember, I was going to my brother's wrestling matches and then seeing him compete, and that just became something that I wanted to do. So, some of the high school guys that my brother trained with were actually the Pee Wee wrestling coaches. So I was able to start Pee Wee wrestling at a very early age. I started, I actually started as a first grader, and then had my first takedown tournament that I went to as a second grader. And the coaches got in trouble for allowing me to attend that because I was too young. So that was, I had to take a break after that for a while before I met the age limit. But for me, that competitive side of wrestling, it just seemed so natural to me that, as soon as I started doing it, it just clicked. And I've been doing it, my entire life since then.
How long did it take for you to excel in that area? I mean, were you good at it right away?
I would say I was above average, but I didn't really come into that, I guess I call it the winning mindset. Like, I expected to win every time I went out there, you know, until probably sixth grade. So there was about 4 years. You know, obviously, I was very young and been just out there thrashing around, not really knowing what I was doing, but something in my brain clicked, and that's when I really started to just win and really enjoy everything about winning, even the hard work part. You know, I began to understand there was a direct correlation with how hard you worked in practice and how disciplined you were to the level of success I was experiencing, you know, in a competitive arena. So I figured that out pretty early, and have kept that going throughout my entire life.
You know, modern MMA fans know you as the Barbarian, and you certainly have that look about you, as we discussed. When exactly did you get that nickname? Was it early on?
No, actually, I didn't get that until my, you know, professional fight career started, and that was, what, 8 years ago now or something like that? And we were just thinking about it, and you know, I've been a huge Arnold Schwarzenegger fan for quite a while, and, you know, Conan the Barbarian was one of my favorite movies that he made. So it just made sense. You know, we're going in there, we're fighting, you know, one guy's getting his hand raised at the end. It's just kind of, you know, a real old school way of doing things in there. And thinking of being barbaric, that's kind of my style. So for me, the Barbarian just made sense.
Now, I'm wondering if you were someone who had a high level of natural testosterone at a young age. I mean, did you become powerful as a person pretty young?
Yeah, I think I started shaving and had a full goatee in seventh grade, so you can say that I developed pretty quickly.
Yeah. I mean, it must have been great to be smashing people as a teenager. I mean, that's the sort of high school experience a lot of people dream about. How did it play out when you won four state championships in wrestling at that age?
Yeah, that was, you know, I think part of that early development was the big reason why I was successful. You know, I wasn't a real small freshman. I was 145 pounds, so pretty big kid when I first got into high school. But then, you know, certainly got bigger. I wrestled 152 my second year, then shot up to 189-pound weight class my junior and senior year, and was definitely fueled by testosterone and you know, could get very angry and throw people around. So that skill set was certainly something I used back then and still use today.
Was it like living in the movie Vision Quest, except you were shoot and almost never lost?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you bring that up. Our wrestling coaches, we'd watch that movie every year before states. That was like the passage of the end of the year for wrestling, you know, when you're in the hunt for the state title. You know, we'd all get pumped up to watch Vision Quest and think we were living that movie.
Yeah. How was it at your school? I mean, did you get the respect that, you know, a four-time champ deserves?
Yeah, there's definitely a level of respect. I think our whole wrestling team really got it. We had a very successful wrestling program. They're still very successful this day. I'm not sure how many state championships in a row they've won, but it's some incredible number. So the school is just, I don't know what it is in the water, but they make some good wrestlers there, and certainly a lot of tough kids there still.
I bet nobody ever wanted to get busy with a young Tim Boach in a fight. I mean, nobody's seen anyway. Was it hard to restrain yourself and not just suplex the people who caused you problems?
Well, it was funny because growing up, I never fought. Like, I was never in street fights. I never really did any of that until I started fighting competitively. So my first fight, there was a lot of questions in my head. Like, I didn't know if I would just be knocked unconscious if somebody touched me on the chin with a punch.
Right.
There were a lot of question marks going into it. But I think the reason why I didn't fight growing up is, you know, I talked to some of my friends about how I was in high school, and they're like, yeah, people just, they just gave you a wide berth. You know, they didn't want to, you know, get into any type of altercation just because that was kind of the air I was giving off. And I didn't mean to do that. I didn't mean to seem intimidating or anything like that. But for some reason, that's just kind of the vibe I was giving off.
when you wrestled in the college ranks, you didn't find the same consistency that you did during your incredible, almost perfect high school years. Was that solely due to the level of competition you're facing, or were there other factors either about you personally or in your life which prevented you from performing at the same level?
For me, you know, I definitely didn't do the things I wanted to do collegiately as a wrestler, but, you know, there was a lot more responsibility on making sure I was getting academically where I wanted to be, because if I didn't carry a certain grade point average, my parents weren't going to be paying as much for college as they did. So there was a lot more on my mind in college, and certainly a higher level of competition is a big factor. But, you know, looking back on my college career, I think that's what fueled me to really push hard into a professional fighting career, is that I didn't experience that success competitively, and I sort of needed to fill that void. And I feel like I've been able to do that in my professional fighting career.
Yeah, that's a good point, because consistency always seems to be something which you've been able to establish at times in your fight career, being consistently consistent, if I can put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, but is that something that you're still working on as a part of your own personal journey as a human being and a martial artist? I mean, Matt Hume seems like a really good coach for that.
Yeah, Hume, you know, has been a huge part of what I've been able to do as a professional fighter. He's a genius in the sport. He's constantly evolving and helping his guys evolve. But recently, you know, I switched camps. I'm now training with Marcus Davis. And, you know, just being able to be closer to home, I'm, you know, a short drive in the car from training camp to being able to be home. But when I was with Matt Hume, you know, it's you can't get any farther away being out in Seattle. So I had to make a change there, but Matt Hume has definitely helped me as a fighter to develop into the person that I am today.
Mike Cisnolevich is the guy who apparently got you into the MMA game, correct?
Yeah, he was my college roommate for a few years.
And he was also a good fighter in his own right, but doesn't seem to have been built for war quite to the extent
no.
that Boch has.
Well, he's a very interesting individual, and you know, my time with him was certainly very character building, and I attribute my fight career getting started to him. He's the one that called me up one day and said, "Hey, I can get you two fights out here this weekend if you're interested in coming." And for some reason at the time, it seemed like it made perfect sense, and I flew out there and won those fights, and have been fighting ever since. So, Mike is you know, definitely. Well, he's the reason why I started fighting, so I give him a lot of the credit.
Yeah, I know the two of you were good friends at the time, so you must have been, you must have known each other pretty well. And was this a case of where, you know, if he can do it, I can do it too?
Yeah, we'd played around, you know, with some submission stuff, so we'd worked out together, and you know, seeing him go out there and actually chase his dream of being a fighter was inspiring to me. You know, I saw him making the commitment to move out there and really put in the work and try to make it happen, and he did. You know, he was a professional fighter, fought in the UFC, did very well.
Yeah.
So seeing him take that step and then getting the opportunity to do it myself, it just made sense. You know, I definitely would have been kicking myself in the butt had I not listened to his advice that, hey, you can come out here and fight. So.
Well, you know, the idea of jumping in at the deep end like that must have been intimidating in some way.
It was. It was very, like I said, there were a lot of unknowns because I'd never been a fighter growing up. So the first time I stepped in the cage and knew that it was just me and this other guy and we were going to work it out and one guy's going to be standing at the end, I just knew from the way that I've been training my whole life, I just have that desire to win. And even though at that point I had no technical knowledge of fighting, I just knew that my toughness would help get me through, and it certainly did for about the first six professional fights I had. And then I realized, hey, it's time to really get serious with this and start making it my main focus.
You know, I remember your old profile on the UFC website. I think it said something to the effect that it was completely insane, like you had been training MMA for only a couple of years or less when you made your debut in the Big Show. Is that right?
Yeah, from the time I started fighting to when I stepped in the UFC cage for the first time was only a year and a half. So I would say I had quite a advanced or a very fast rise to the highest level of the sport.
So that means that basically when you were fighting in the IFL, you were basically a tough wrestler with barbarian genes.
Exactly. And that was getting me by at the time. So, you know, everything I've learned since then is definitely just been icing on the cake.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a tall order for most people. Most people would be scared as, you know, fighting with such little experience, and they certainly wouldn't have been able to fight the way that you did from the start. And even most wrestlers we see step in the cage, they don't like to strike to start off, you know, and they don't mix it
up. For me, I've always been fascinated with striking, and I've always felt like I've had pretty good power in my hands even before I knew what I was doing, and it felt like an easy way to finish fights, so definitely a way that I want to utilize my skills to try to end things quickly, because yeah, you still get paid the same if a fight's only 2 minutes versus 15, so as long as you're winning.
You weren't just laying on people like some wrestlers. I mean, you were TKOing them and making, you know, quick work of them. You had a memorable UFC debut where you beat up David Heath and then threw him down on his head in a way that was exactly on the line of being, you know, horrific. It was really something to see. That was a memorable debut. Can you talk a little bit about signing with the UFC for that fight on short notice? What were you expecting from Heath going in there and the way the fight itself played out?
Well, I knew it was obviously going to be a step up in competition. You know, UFC is the biggest show there is and the most talented pool of fighters that there is. So I knew going in that it was going to be a tough fight, but I also knew that it was my opportunity to be where I wanted to be and show the world what I could do. So when you get an opportunity like that, for me, it was a no-brainer. I'm jumping all over it, even though it was, you know, short-notice fight, 10 days. But at the time, you know, I was training pretty much with the same intensity year round. So I was ready to take fights whenever anybody would call. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit tougher to do that now with family and the level that I fight now, and the body doesn't heal quite as quick as it used to. So I do need a little more downtime now, and I'm, you know, obviously I'm cutting weight now, but, then I was just ready to fight all the time. I was training hard. My body was feeling good, and I would take whatever was given to me. And that David Heath fight was obviously a huge opportunity, and obviously the fight that really got me noticed. People are like, holy cow, this guy took this fight on short notice. He comes in here and brutalizes somebody. That's what we want to see. And, you know, you talked about me being that savage kind of style. Well, to me, when I'm in there fighting, it is kind of a survival instinct kicks in. You know, I'm not in there to try to score points and lay on people and just eke out a win. When I fight, for me, a fight is real. It really is a real thing to me, and I want to be the guy standing at the end. So that's the reason why I fight like I do.
How deliberate was it to throw him like that at the end? I mean, were you deliberately trying to do that, or did you just grab the tie clinch and feel him going over before you helped him on his way?
Yeah, it was just the wrestler's underhook, and I had him wobbled from hitting him with a few knees earlier, and his balance was off, and I felt him going, so I just finished the job for him. So it was a nice little throw to finish things off in there.
Well, like I said, this was a memorable debut for you. I also felt like it, in some way it may have set the bar a little high. You performed incredibly well, but you may have raised expectations for yourself in the process. Do you feel like you might have made people think you were more seasoned and polished as a fighter than you were at the time?
I think so, because, you know, things escalated pretty quickly, and then I ended up getting cut by the UFC. And at the time I got cut, I was still pretty raw. I mean, I was still training in my basement, in my father-in-law's basement at the time. So after I got cut, I realized, well, okay, I can see how this works. You know, if you're not performing to their expectations, then, you know, you're not going to stick around long. So that's when I started looking for, you know, a legitimate training camp with other fighters, fighters that, you know, use this to pay the bills as well. So it was important for me to find that group. And, you know, once I found Matt Hume, he helped me develop those skills, and I was training with guys, you know, day in and day out that were just fighting. So that's when things really started changing for me.
Yeah, your next fight, you lost to Matt Hamill, who was really in his competitive prime and on a streak at the time, and relative to your level of experience, he was certainly the more rounded fighter. What did you learn from the Hamill fight in terms of it being your first decisive loss?
Well, for me, it was I was very disappointed in myself that I didn't realize how much altitude played a part, because that was in Colorado. And I remember being completely gassed within minutes of that first round. And, you know, for a guy that's already fighting on pure instinct, to realize that the gas tank is empty is a very scary place to be. And with a guy who is as seasoned as Matt and as skilled as Matt, you know, he's one of the tougher guys and more powerful guys in the weight class at the time. That's not somebody you want to be in there and be fatigued fighting again. So it was definitely an uphill battle from the start, but it was one of those fights where I realized, you know, I went in there not understanding really what I was getting into, and that was a real eye-opener for me.
Yeah, I mean, I could probably spend hours going through your different UFC appearances and analyzing them in depth, because they were all interesting matchups, and most of them played out in a very exciting fashion for the fans. So skipping ahead slightly, at what point did you exactly become hooked up with Matt Hume and the AMC team?
So when I got cut from the UFC, that's when I really, you know, I knew I belonged in the UFC. That's where I wanted to be. That's where I saw myself, you know, making a career. So I wanted to figure out what the best route was to get back in. And obviously I knew I had to win some fights, you know, in an exciting manner to get back in. And I went ahead and did that and got hooked up with Matt. And then when I came back to the UFC, I was with Matt Hume at that point.
When you dropped to 185, you were immediately successful. I think everyone remembers the way you came out and absolutely dominated good fighters like Kendall Grove and Nick Ring, who I think were both at their best at the time that you beat them.
Yeah.
You also showcased a more wrestling-based style in those fights. What was the catalyst for dropping weight? Did that idea come from Hume?
No, he never brought it up. You know, I think that's part of his coaching style. Is, you know, he helps you in ways you don't even understand. And
right.
By me making that decision on my own, it really took more hold as something that I knew I wanted to do and something I needed to do, rather than him tell me it was something I needed to do. It was a decision that I had to make up on my own. Because at the time, you know, I would easily be walking around at 235 pounds. So thinking of cutting all the way down to 185 was a huge deal. And once I figured out I could do it, it was a no-brainer, because I knew once I got there, I'd be very strong. And certainly with my wrestling ability, I think it would tip things to my advantage. And it did. And I'm glad that I figured that out.
Your streak at 185 culminated with two huge wins that you absolutely raised your profile and reestablished yourself as a contender. The Yushin Okama fight in a thriller, and then you edged the fearsome Hector Lombard in a close fight, which many people had mixed feelings about, but which most agreed you had definitely won. And I think everyone watching had you losing pretty decisively to Okami through the first couple of rounds of your fight. Between rounds, if I remember correctly, were also impressing upon the need to finish the fight, I think your corner was, and at that point, and you did it, and it was really, really amazing. What was the Okama fight like to you?
Pretty much what you described. I was dominated for the first two rounds, and, you know, coming out in the third, my only option was to knock him out or submit him. I had to finish him to win that fight. I knew it. He knew it. Everybody in the building knew it. And, you know, part of dropping to 185 was my conditioning. You know, I wasn't used to having that gas tank that I have as a middleweight. When I was light heavyweight, I'd get tired, and that's just what would happen. And going out in that third round, even though I was a bit battered and beaten up, I knew I still had that go in me, and I knew I could still throw hard punches and I could push the pace. And, you know, again, I knew that I had power in my hands, that if I connected, I could do some damage. So knowing those things, I just went out there and did what I was trained to do and pushed the pace, landed those big shots and got him against the cage and hit him with some real hard uppercuts, and it just all came together perfectly, and I finished him.
What was it which made the Okami fight different? I mean, why was it that you think you were able to dig down deep in that fight specifically and refuse to accept the same sort of loss as you had suffered previously?
I think I started out trying to be technical, you know, so I was in there trying to technically outstrike Yushin, who was clearly the better technical striker that day. And, you know, when I think too much as a fighter, I get in trouble and things don't happen. When I kind of go into that no thought zone that, you know, martial artists talk about, it's hard for me to explain, but when I go in there and I just fight the way I want to fight, good things happen, and usually it's exciting for the crowd, and that's, you know, what I'm trying to do. It's sports entertainment. I want to leave with a big paycheck, and I want everybody that watches me to leave talking about the fight and be happy with what they saw. So, you know, I just went out there that final round, said I'm just going to let everything go, and whatever happens. You know, I'm already losing this fight. Nothing worse can happen. So that's what happened, and I went out there and knocked him out. So.
Well,
I'm glad I did it that way.
a lot of people have actually questioned why is it that that sometimes you don't fight that way in the first round, and you know, but regardless, at the end result, I think most people would agree that when you go into barbarian mode and throw bombs the way that you did in that fight, that the results seem to be in your favor.
Yeah, for me, you know, people talk about that. Why don't you just do that when you first start a fight? And sometimes it takes me a little bit to get warmed up. Sometimes I need to get hit and I get mad. I don't know what it is, but sometimes it takes a little bit for me to get going.
You showed a good tactical game plan against Hector Lombard, the Wrecking Machine. He was heavily favored, but you came in and fought very smart in a way that frustrated him visibly.
Yeah.
Can you tell the folks at home a bit about that fight? I mean, how you prepared for Lombard and the way it played out in the ring?
The thing about fighting Hector Lombard is if you give him the opportunity to hit you, he's going to hurt you real bad. And that was kind of, you know, the main thing we knew going into that fight is if I put myself in the danger zone, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get hurt. And, you know, whether I would have been able to push through that or not, I don't know. It probably would have made for a crazy throwdown brawl with who knows what the outcome would have been. But I knew if I was able to keep him at distance and work those leg kicks and a long jab and prevent the wrestling, I knew that I could get the win that way. And for a guy that I think he had 26 wins in a row or something coming into that fight, for me at that point, I really wanted to win that fight. Like I wanted to come away with a W, you know, no matter what it took, whether it was, you know, executing that game plan, you know, and that's what we did. I went out and executed the game plan and I got the win. But like you said, there were mixed reviews about it. People, you know, didn't think that fight was going to go down that way at all. And I sort of agree. I think on paper, it should have been a brutal slugfest with somebody getting KO'd in the first round. But that being said, you know, I went in and got the win and ended a very long streak. And that's something I'm going to be able to take with me forever.
Yeah, it wasn't the most electrifying fight, but you clearly won. Do you think the fight, that fight, the way it unfolded, hurt your case for a title shot afterwards? I know there was some talk of that for Lombard if he had won, but you didn't get the opportunity. Between the Lombard and Tavares fights, I think it's safe to say that you went through the worst patch of your career.
Yeah, without a doubt I did. And not sure exactly what the root of that was, but, you know, that's fighting. As a fighter, you're going to deal with ups and downs and how you deal with that adversity and whether you can push through it and keep that end goal in mind is I think, what makes the difference between guys who make a very long career of this sport or the guys that fade away. And, you know, even though I went through that rough patch and had to reevaluate some things. You know, I'm still pushing hard to keep winning and still trying to reach my goals and still trying to get myself into that championship position. And I think I'm doing that again now, you know, coming off my last big win in my own, in basically my hometown. I think I'm positioned right now to put on another run, and I yep. see the end of this run ending in the title, title shot, taking that belt.
I got to tell you, I must admit that I felt that your fight versus Costas Filippo wasn't a good representation of your skills. I mean, you seemed to have some bad luck in that fight between what was reported to be a broken hand and a very brutal eye poke. Was that just a case of bad luck in the cage?
Yeah, it certainly was. I actually, had a... It wasn't a hand injury. I had actually separated my ribs, and I think it was like the first 90 seconds of the fight. And then the eye pokes, and it was just bad luck. And you have those nights, and that's part of the game. Unfortunately, people thought that that's who I was as a fighter, but, I don't like to make excuses, but that's the way it goes sometimes in the fight game. You plan well, you train hard, and then it all can come unglued in a single moment in that cage, and everything fall apart. So
yeah.
That was that's what happened there.
And you seem to be on the wrong end of a headbutt, too.
yeah.
and all in the span of about 5 minutes, the eye poke and the tide turned pretty quickly. And you told Hume audibly that you were having trouble seeing, but that you definitely didn't want the fight to be stopped. Do you have any regrets about not making more of the eye poke and possibly stopping the fight at that point, given how severe it was?
Well, I couldn't, the vision was definitely a problem, but you got to understand the way that I think is if I'm in there standing and throwing punches, I've got a chance. And I'd hurt him in the first round with a front kick. I flash knocked him out. So I knew that he had the potential of getting his button pushed. So I knew if I could hit him, I could finish the fight. Probably career-wise, not a smart move, but for me personally, I couldn't live with myself if I quit a fight. Knowing that potentially I could go in there and hit him with the right hand and put him out. So,
how long did it take the eye to get better? I mean, how bad was it afterwards?
It took a while before I had a full field of vision, but it came back. I can see fine today. It was the rib injury was the thing that took the longest. That was several months to heal. But that's better now too. Except when it rains, I feel it.
That's weird.
But all is well now.
You know, I think.
Yeah, I've got plenty of injuries that definitely let me know when bad weather's coming.
I wonder why that is though. Like, because you hear that with many different injuries, like knee injuries and back injuries. Like, why these injuries just get worse when the weather gets a certain way.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something to it, I'm sure, though, because I definitely feel it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think most people, going back to the Costas fight, I think most people would expect a different result if there were to be a rematch, more like what we saw in the first round of that fight. And speaking of first rounds, I thought you had you and Mark Munoz, during your fight, you had him hurt early in the first round with a big punch that seemed to stun him, but it seemed like afterwards he was able to implement a pure wrestling game that you weren't prepared for.
Yeah, again, I've just had a run of bad luck, and that's the fight game. There's some things that happened leading into that fight that I knew I probably was going to be able to fight hard for a round, and then after that it was going to be rough. And certainly that's exactly how it played out. And, Mark went away with the W, and I had to go back to the drawing board to try to figure things out. But I feel like right now things are definitely on track, and I'm very happy with physically where I'm at, mentally where I'm at, and in the camp I'm at right now. I think everything's lining up really, really well for the future.
Yeah, this period definitely seemed to have been one of the worst slumps, the worst slump of your career. And you did beat CB Dalloway, but many people felt that decision should have gone his way, and I'm sure you weren't fully satisfied with that performance as well. What did you take from that fight with CB?
That's one fight that does bug me that people complain about. I look back on it, and you know, he got more takedowns, and I just don't see how people argue so strongly that he won that fight. And again, dealing with fingers being gouged into my eyes, you know,
right.
It just kind of bugs me that people argue that so hard. And, you know, my thing I want to tell them is I offer them this. Try fighting without being able to see. Like, it's a heck of a thing to even consider. And then to get, like, the backlash of, well, you should have lost that fight, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's one of the ones that does really bug me to hear about. So, again, but what I took from that is, you know, I don't want fights to be close. I don't want to go in there as any type of point fighter, you know, and feel like I have to execute a certain game plan to be successful. I just want to go in there and be known as a dangerous guy who's constantly looking to take out his opponents. And I think getting back to that is critical for me to get where I want to be,
you know,
in this weight class.
If CB had won, you would have had a 4-fight losing streak going into the lockout.
Yeah, I wouldn't have had a job.
Yeah. And then, you know, Luke is obviously a beast and a title contender at 185, but so are you when you can put it all together. Was that a case of getting stuck in a bad position? I mean, it seemed like you were essentially trapped, and he had a lot of time to methodically set up what he was doing.
Yeah, that was the first fight in a long time where I felt 100% going in, and it's rare for any fighter to be 100% healthy going into a fight after a hard training camp. But I felt great. My confidence was very high. My conditioning was unreal at that point. I was ready to go in there and fight hard for 15 minutes if I needed to. And then to get caught in a double submission within moments of the first round, you know, it just left me shaking my head. Like, I couldn't believe that it turned out that way. But again, you know, that's part of this sport is you can be as well prepared as you think you are, and you go in there and something bizarre happens, and you get caught, or you get clipped, or you get hit with a punch, or who knows what happens. But things can change in the blink of an eye in that octagon, and you just got to do your best to rebound afterwards. You know, I could dwell on the fact that I lost that fight very quickly, and, you know, it could have hurt my confidence. It could have done any number of things to me, but it certainly hasn't. You know, I'm still as driven as I was the day I started fighting, and, you know, I'm looking to be successful. I don't do this to go out there and lose. I do this every day to win. You know, that's just my personality, and that's what I'm looking to do for the foreseeable future.
Well, I think Luke's combination of strength and leverage meant that some grappling positions were going to be in his favor, and you ended up falling into one quickly. What was that? Was that bad luck or just a tactical error on your part or a bit of both?
It was a bit of both. You know, I saw a takedown opportunity. I ran through the takedown, and then out of the scramble, he landed in a reverse triangle and a Kimura, which, you know, I've never been submitted in the practice room anywhere with that, so to land in that position, and I can remember that moment as plain as day right now. I landed on you know, all fours, and I paused for a split second. He sank that reverse triangle, and I knew immediately that I was in trouble. Like you said, his body type, when he sank those legs in, I knew I probably was going to be waking up from the referee because it was that tight. You know, he was cutting the blood flow off instantly. So, you know, he was very skilled. He took advantage of the position very quickly. So hats off to him that he was able to do that. But for me, you know, to lose, it just adds to the fire. When I lose a fight, especially like that, it makes me angry, and I want to prove that that's not who I am.
You know, I think you definitely could have knocked him out standing if the fight had remained there.
Yeah.
We may see it again. But in terms of the fight you lost, are there any you would prioritize in terms of your desire for a rematch?
I think that one. I think the fight with Luke definitely is not a representation of who I am in there. And, you know, Lord willing, if things go as planned, I think we'll cross paths again. We're both, you know, he's obviously closer to the top than I am, but with my plans, I plan on getting back up there, and hopefully we will meet in the cage again.
Right, and you may get the chance at revenge due to your big win over Brad Tavares, which I think most people are hoping is the beginning of a career resurgence for the Barbarian. This was another fight that you seemed to be on the wrong end of, much like Okami, before you landed the devastating KO shots. And it must have been great for you to get that win on the main card, and the crowd seemed to really react huge when you came through with the win.
Yeah, that whole experience is going to be very tough to beat. That's definitely a highlight of my career so far. Brad's a very tough fighter, obviously. He's very technically skilled and very hungry. You know, he wants that success too, and he's tough. You know, I felt that pressure early on in the fight, but I also sort of could sense that he was working very hard to try to do what he was doing. And I was, able to just feel his energy. And then I knew the moment I had him hurt that I could jump all over that and finish the fight. And that's what I did. But, he's definitely got a bright future.
What sort of emotional and mental process did you go through when he seemed to be in control? I mean, did you flash back to the Okami fight and how you finished him?
No, it wasn't that dramatic for me. I knew position-wise he was winning the fight. But I also knew how hard he was working at that point to maintain that position. And, you know, when you're in the fight, there's certain things you can pick up on that kind of give you cues as to what's going on with your opponent. And I was picking up on some of those things. So even though position-wise he was winning the fight, I felt pretty confident about where things were going to go.
Well, folks, betting on Tim Boach by KO always has a chance to pay out. There's no question about that. And not to sound like a broken record, but even though it was another thrilling fight, you had to have been asking yourself in some way what it takes, why it takes some adversity for you to truly fight the way that you're able to.
Yeah, it does, but I think once my opponents trigger that survival mode in me, things go downhill quickly for them. So it's kind of an interesting position that my opponents are in. You know, they can go out and try and take me out, but that's oftentimes what unleashes the Barbarian. So kind of roll the dice when you do that.
And all of that finally brings us to your next fight against a very tough Talis Latis. This is at UFC 183 on January 31st from Vegas. And Latis is originally a Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner, but more recently he's become known as a guy who can wrestle for 15 minutes and knock opponents out as well. He's also on a hot streak, and you have to be figuring that you can jump over him in the rankings and get back closer to the top with a big win in this fight. He's known for his chin and occasionally abandoning his game plan, but this is a really, really interesting fight on paper. It could be a war here.
Absolutely, and that's what we're training for. Exactly what you described. He's tough all around. Great jiu-jitsu background, but lately he wants to smash people, and he's been doing that, and definitely not afraid to let his hands go. Takes a solid punch, seems to be unfazed when people hit him, and he grinds people out. So pretty much all around a bad fight for anybody, but I look at this one and I get excited because I think this has the makings for potentially fight of the night because the fireworks that are going to go on in there. I know that he is going to come out and try and take my head off. I think he truly believes that he can finish me with one punch. And believe it or not, I'm thinking the same thing. I think I'm going to show him what it feels like to get really hit hard. So I think that's going to be the recipe for the beginning of the fight, and then we'll see who's the first one to deviate from there.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you expect from him, and how do you see this fight playing out?
I think he's going to start out fast, and I think he's going to bring you all those power shots early. I think he wants to get this over with fast, and that's exactly what I expect. I don't think I'm going to meet him in the middle of the cage. He's probably going to sprint across and try and put me against my corner as quickly as possible and start unloading bombs. So that's what I expect, but maybe he knows that's what I expect. So, you know, it's always interesting to see what the game plan is when things start. But,
right.
You know, that's the thing about fighting. Game plans have a way of changing very quickly once things get rolling around in the octagon.
That's a good point. And he's known for his ground game, but sometimes he doesn't use it. And I would say that he's not particularly known as a guard player, and probably is a little weaker in that area. But this isn't a guy you want on top of you. I mean, he's not going to get stopped easily by strikes, as we've seen in many of his other fights. He got blasted over and over again by Martin Campman, and he just kept coming. What Tim Boat should the fans expect in this fight?
Well, honestly, this I hope is a new version of Tim Boach, part of the evolution of the Barbarian, and I believe it's going to be the nastiest one that anybody's seen so far, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, so this is most likely going to be a combination of the tactical Tim Boach and Barbarian Tim Boach, and
and pure violent Tim Boach.
Exactly. And this is going to be on the Anderson Silva-Nick Diaz card. And
yes,
you know, if Diaz shows up to fight, this should be an enormous event. I shouldn't jinx it. You never know with the Diaz voice, but, you know. Well, listen.
No, I think it's going to be a great card.
Absolutely. And I want to let you get back to training. Again, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show here. It's in answering all these questions. I mean, we could have created so many more questions, but we don't want to take up too much of your time. Before I let you go, let's remind people to check out your fight against Hollis Latus on January 31st. Plus, let them know where they can keep up with you on social media.
Yeah, so if you're on Twitter, you can follow me on there. Twitter/Tim Boach, I believe, is how you track me down. That's pretty much where I do all my social media stuff and keep people updated on what's going on and throw some pictures up there. So check me out over on Twitter. And definitely check out the fight January 31st. I'll be celebrating my birthday a couple days before. Hopefully a big victory on the 31st and then a true celebration after the fight. So everybody tune in, check it out. It's going to be a great card. I know I'm going to be part of a great fight. Very exciting, very explosive. Make sure you tune in.
Yeah, there's no question about that. It is going to be a great fight and a great event. Thanks again for taking the time to join us. And we'll be watching your next fight and hoping for another vintage Barbarian performance, Tim.
Well, thanks for having me on, and I appreciate the support.
Kids, that's a touch of vibe. One motive, no hope. It's hard to breathe with Wilson Tanner on my
Shields on the show back in 2009 or 2008, perhaps, and we've been itching to get him back on ever since. Jake, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. Just finished a tough workout. Practice went a little longer than I thought, so a little tired, but other than that, everything's going good.
Yeah, you know, as I mentioned, we had you on several years ago, and so much has changed in your life and in the world of MMA since then. It's great to have you back on for an update. There's quite a lot happening in the career of Jake Shields, so let's get started with the latest developments. You most recently beat Ryan Ford in a fight that turned out to be controversial for weird reasons. Ford is a good fighter. Sometimes he looks great, and he was definitely, you know, a solid win for you to dominate him and submit him the way you did. Before we talk about the aftermath, what recollection do you have of the fight itself and the way it played out?
It went, you know, pretty much according to plan. I wanted to go out there and, you know, put a lot of pressure on him. I was really looking for a first round finish. You know, I hadn't had a finish in a while. I really wanted to go out there and make a statement. And that was pretty much planned. You know, I got out there and was able to submit him in the first round.
He seemed to stun you with the shot early, but it didn't follow up on it. And almost always the case is with him is that, and eventually you recovered and went on to win decisively. After the fight, Ford started claiming that he had fought with a broken arm, and he started posting x-rays of the apparent break. Then he ended up getting suspended for concealing the injury from the doctors, which I guess serves him right for bringing it up at all. And during the lead-up to the fight and the match itself, did you have any sense that something was wrong with him? Was there anything obvious about the way he looked or acted that made it seem like he could be hurt?
Yeah, I think he was definitely exaggerating the situation. He probably had something wrong with the arm or something else. You know, maybe exaggerating. You know, he was doing the post-fight or the pre-fight physical. He was doing, you know, push-ups on his knuckles, and he seemed to be fighting fine, throwing punches fine. So I think it's something he's exaggerated to help look for an excuse.
You know, you certainly finished him quickly, but I think most people expected that if you got him in a bad position, you'd be able to finish him. Anyway, the saga of the alleged pre-broken arm doesn't shock me because Ford seems like, you know, seems like it's his destiny to have what I would call an unusual life. He's almost like a smarter version of Crazy Horse. Maybe smarter isn't the word.
Yeah, probably a little smarter than Crazy Horse, but maybe not by much.
Yeah, and he apparently, this is you know, shocking but not surprising, he apparently cut a guy's thumb off in that home invasion back in, I think it was 2003, which is really, really gruesome. I guess in some ways the arm injury,
yeah,
to what extent it's true, was some sort of karmic payback for that. Now that you've got that win behind you, you've got another upcoming fight for World Series of Fighting against Brian Foster. And Foster, as you know, hits very hard, but I feel that his mental game doesn't match up to yours.
Yeah, that's a very good assessment. That's kind of, I think, you know, the guy's actually, you know, Brian Foster's the guy before I accepted, you know, I recognized, but never watched him fight, so
right.
I accepted the fight before ever watching him fight, and I started watching videos, and he actually is a really talented fighter. You know, his stand-up's really, really good, and at times he looks amazingly impressive, so I'm taking him serious, but at other times where, like you said, his middle game, you know, there's a few fights where he seems kind of just almost like quit in the middle of the fight, like against, example, that would be against, I'm having a brain freeze. His first fight at the UFC, guy I know well, Southpaw. You know, he ended up getting choked from guard for a pretty weak submission. Looked more like he just wanted out of the fight.
Right.
So he's one of those guys, a really talented guy, but sometimes doesn't live up to what he could do.
Exactly. I mean, he's a good opponent, but I think that if he can't stop you very quickly, it's going to be a difficult night for him. What's your assessment of him as opponent? I guess you basically just gave it. He seems like
I do think he's as dangerous, though. Like you said, he's a guy that can be beat. You can break him mentally, but I believe he has like 21 finishes, so he's dangerous. You know, he's got like 11 submissions, 10 knockouts, something like that. So a guy that dangerous, you know, even though you can break him mentally, he's always dangerous and always game to fight. So I'm certainly not taking him lightly.
Exactly, and he has good finishing strikes and good submissions and. But, you know, when he isn't beating on guys, he seems to be much more vulnerable. And I must say again that I'm not sure Foster's mental game is up to task. And we dealt with him briefly here when trying to get him up for an interview, and he seemed like a strange person at best, possibly an unstable one at worst. If someone called in right now and told me Brian Foster had some personality disorder, that wouldn't be too hard for me to believe. So.
I know very little about the guy. Like you said, I do. He's a name that I heard a lot. You know, I haven't really heard him, Brian Foster, but I don't watch that many fights. Top level guys, and then, you know, so I knew who he was. I'd actually never watched a fight till recently. And as far as the personality, I mean, I have no idea where he trains. I have no idea what he sounds like talking. I've never seen an interview of his. So I basically, this is probably one of the least I've known about someone that I'm going to fight.
Yeah. So I think everybody's advice would be to keep your hands up in the first couple of minutes. And once he's in your world, I think it's not going to be a good night for him. And then you go from there, not overlooking him, but a lot of people are saying, okay, if Jake wins, then you've got Paul Harris submitting another, top contender, a guy that you were supposed to fight. You were supposed to fight John Fitch. What do you make of Paul Harris?
I mean, the guy is, he's scary with his leg locks. What can you say? Everyone knows Zakowicz and Goon. He goes out there and does it, and he puts damage to him. He goes out there and drops, he'll shoot into the leg, he'll drop right into it, he'll full guard. He just goes to the leg any way you can get him. And once you get it, he tries to snap the thing off. He tries breaking the knee, breaking the ankle, anything he can do. So he's someone, but I feel like, I have really good jiu-jitsu skills, I have good leg lock defenses, so he's someone I match up well with. But he's still someone that I take very, very seriously.
Yeah, he's a scary prospect, I think, for any fighter. And I picked him to beat John Fitch by leg lock in the first round. And, knowing how good Fitch is on the ground, it shows you. But having said that, I think a lot of people find it hard to imagine him heel-hooking Jake Shields in a fight. I'm not sure exactly why that is, but I think this matchup might actually favor you in subtle ways.
Yeah, I think it's a good matchup for me. But, there's not many people that I'd respect their submissions at all, but he's one that I would definitely respect that leg lock. It's unusual. He does things different than most people, so it's very serious. These guys, he's putting good guys away with it, and at submission tournaments, too. At Abu Dhabi, he taps, top submission guys with that leg lock and knee bar. So it's something that, right now we're getting Foster, but if we get through Foster, I'm going to really start studying his leg lock and knee bar and see exactly what he does.
Exactly. I'm not sure if I've ever seen anyone get into a position to even attempt to heel hook you. Has that ever happened in the pro fight, Jake?
I believe not in a fight, no. If a guy tried to heel hook me in matches, I've never been submitted in a heel hook or leg lock. But, I feel like I've never fought anyone with Paul Harris' leg lock abilities also. He's a different level as far as heel hooks and leg locks. In my opinion, I think he's probably the best in the world.
To what extent
do you think... Not just MMA and all jiu-jitsu as well, so...
Yeah, because you just don't see a lot of leg lock finishes in MMA, because guys obviously have adapted to them. You're susceptible to strikes and everything. To what extent do you think fighting him is about stifling the leg lock attempts versus working out of them?
I think a lot of it's just not even getting there. You have to be ready to get out of them, too. And I think maybe not overdwell on it. Go out there and put your game on it. You don't want to be thinking the whole match leg lock, that'll allow him to do other things, because he does have other moves as well. So obviously, prepare for the leg locks, but you can't just be looking for that, because everyone's story about leg locks that allows him to open up his striking, to open up his other submissions. He's one of the best black belts in the world. I'm sure he has good chokes, good arm locks, not just the leg lock.
Right.
People need to not forget about his other weapons.
Is it possible to foil all his attempts so he never gets into that position at all, or is it inevitable that he'll go for something and really defending and getting on top should be the priority?
It's definitely, you can stifle it. But, like in any fight, you have to prepare for anything. You have to prepare for all options. So you don't have plan A, plan B, plan C. So, you want to build a completely steak and whip your leg, but you also want to be ready for it if you get there.
Has there been any talk?
And possibly, yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I would say also, be ready to attack his. A lot of guys, when you get there, no one ever attacks his
right
back. Everyone's like panics when you attack him. Who knows how he's going to react when someone tries breaking his leg on him.
That's a good point. That's exactly what I thought when watching the Fitch fight, is that, Fitch had an opportunity, I think, to try to go for a heel hook himself, and he didn't, and he got trapped, and it was bad. He ended up tapping out something like 15 times.
Yeah, I think people maybe are getting a little too scared with leg locks now, which makes them, as soon as they get there, they just panic instead of doing what they would do against a regular person, try to fight them back.
Has there been any talk about this fight from World Series of Fighting Management? I can't help but think it's on their minds.
Yeah, I know. Well, they say I'm fighting for one number one contender fight, so basically as long as I win this one, that's the next fight.
I got to say, if Paul Harris beat you, I would have to consider him the best pure grappler at 170. We'll see what happens and if the fight gets made. That brings me to another point, which I know we have to cover for the people at home. I think you're well established as the sort of fighter who can beat any opponent of the same weight class on the right night, and there are so few other fighters out there who are an automatic threat to anyone in the world just based on their style of fighting alone. That's very impressive. But I wonder if that's gone against you when dealing with the UFC. As basically someone, you know, who covers the sport, I watched you fight Hector Lombard, and ridiculously, that loss was your first after a four-fight win streak. Before we talk about the reasoning behind it, were you surprised to get your release from the UFC after the Lombard fight?
Yeah, I was a little surprised, but, you know, it's just part of the game. You know, I think, you know, they want me to be more of a stand-up fighter. Maybe they want to pay me a little less and things like that. So it's just it's part of the game, you know. I had a really bad night against Lombard, but I still think, you know, I was going on a good win streak. You know, I beat their current champ, some of their past champs. I think it was a little unfair to cut me, but it is what it is.
I thought you actually did pretty well in that fight. Lombard wasn't really able to hurt you that much, and you stifled his offense in a lot of ways. And I think we watched some of your recent wins and wisely adapted his fighting style so, you know, he could outpoint you. And you've done the same thing to many opponents. But fans were shocked when you were released because you've had so many high-profile wins there, including, you know, that main event against Damian Maia less than 6 months ago. And I think the UFC knows you can beat anyone at 170 on any given day, even someone as good as George St. Pierre. And I think they're, you know, afraid you'll win the fights they don't want you to win, but they don't think your style is pleasing enough to, you know, promote you to a mainstream audience, I guess. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, they thought there's definitely a chance I could be the champ, and they want me to be the champ, so they prefer just to push me out instead.
What's your thinking on the way the UFC appears to have treated you harshly relative to many other fighters?
You know, it's just part of the game. You know, the UFC, you know, there's a lot of fighters not happy with them. It's certainly not just me. It's just how they treat everyone in general. They just, you know, when they want you to do, when they don't, they don't. And it's, you know, I don't have anything bad to say about the UFC. I'm not like all bitter. There's things they don't like about them, but they've also done good things to me as well. You know, I made some good money there. I got some extra promotion there. So it's, obviously, I'm not thrilled the way things ended, but overall, I don't feel like I have any bad blood.
One other issue surrounding your departure from the UFC may have been the failed test for an unpublished banned substance. Lots of fighters have failed tests before, especially with some of the ridiculously low thresholds they use, so there's no shame in that. But I wonder if sometimes shows like the UFC use this stuff as an excuse to target fighters they want to release.
Yeah, it was several fights later, and it was, you know, I don't think that was the issue.
Can we break the scoop right now of what you tested positive for? What was the banned substance?
I'm not supposed to say into the thing, but it was, yeah, nothing too serious. It's worth it to minor suspension.
I see. And, yeah, so, you know, we'll just, you know, have to see what happens going forward. But I think anyone, suspects you of doing anything as far as taking a real performance-enhancing drug, I don't think that really enters the equation because nothing about the way you look or fight suggests, you know, someone who takes shortcuts.
Certainly.
And I think, you know, you not being in the UFC undermines the legitimacy of the sport itself. I mean, is this about the best fighters or WWE pro wrestlers with BJJ white belts? Because, you know, with the recent signing of CM Punk, there's been a lot of criticism of the UFC as far as what direction they're going in.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, being a real fighter, I certainly don't like the direction of trying to push a pro wrestler and all that. But, I mean, I guess it's a business, too. So, it's a tough call. It's easy to judge them when they're out there trying to make money. But I think in the long run, trying to be legitimate, trying to sign the best fighters in the world probably is the way to make money in the long run. They're maybe looking short-sighted money.
True. You were in some close fights, admittedly, but it seems like they treated those two split decisions as losses, which is unfair. I mean, you got the win bonus, which is great, but if you don't get to advance the way other winners do, it has to be frustrating for you on some level, am I right?
Yeah, no, definitely, especially considering the guys I was beating. You know, I was beating their top fighters. You know, Tyron Woodley, you know, I believe he's in the top 10. I beat when I beat Damian Maia, I think he was ranked like 3 or 4, maybe 5. He was like top 5 when I beat him. You know, just beating all these guys one after the next, and they just keep, you know, not giving me anything for it. And, you know, when you're fighting the top of the top, it's hard to find the finishes you want.
Does it bother you that people have disputed some of your wins? I mean, that's in some way par for the course with these close fights that have split decisions nowadays.
I mean, everyone's up to their own opinion, you know. Like, if they're fights, I feel like I've won, but if people want to disagree, I tell them that they don't have a right to disagree.
And that's something which is marked in UFC 10. I mean, the close fights, even from your first appearance against Martin Kamen, it was a very close fight, and people argued about the result. And like I said, it's not your fault that the judges thought you won those fights. I mean, of the split decisions you've had, though, while in the UFC against Kamen, Woodley, and Maya, which of those fights did you feel most sure that you had won?
That's a tough call. Probably, I mean, I felt like I won all those fights. I was really worried in Brazil because being in Brazil, fighting, fighting Maya, that was right in his hometown, so I was worried that I wouldn't want to go to her because I felt like I'd won. But I felt, you know, pretty sure I'd won all those. I mean, I'm not going to say they weren't. Obviously, you're a little worried for a decision, but I felt pretty confident in all three of those.
Which performance felt the most complete to you?
Overall in the UFC, or?
No, those fights.
Probably Damian Maia, just because he's a five-rounder, you know, he's considered the best grappler in the sport, or at least my weight, if not the sport, and to go out there and beat him in Brazil in his hometown felt really rewarding.
Absolutely. And I got to tell you, it was all close. The Woodley fight was close, although I thought the judges could have given him the decision, but, you know, with these fights, it could have gone either way. And I got to tell you, in MMA, there's a case to be made for being known as a specialist and liking a certain type of fight. I mean, not only did it help you win fights during the early part of your career, but I think playing it safe, building up the winning streak, and making it known that you like a moderately paced grappling-based fights paid dividends down the road, in which, you know, ways are not always, you know, obvious. And I think that by making a name for yourself as a guy who fights a certain way, every time a fight goes that way and it's close, judges remember that you're the guy that likes to be methodical in grappling, and they side with you as the winner a lot of times.
Yeah, definitely. Some of my fights too have been kind of frustrating. I feel like because I'm so known as a grappler, like some of the opponents I've been fighting have just been trying to stay away from me and not really engage. You know, like Tyron Woodley, for example. I feel like these guys, they're kind of the ones running backward. They don't want to throw many punches, so I'm stuck trying to force all the action.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what happened in a lot of your split, or all your split decision wins, is judges.
And then I'm blamed for, you know, not getting action, but it's like the opponents are so scared of my ground, they're just like trying to stay away from me and disengage.
Yeah, I definitely think that's true. And in terms of your fight strategy, how deliberate is the way you fight? I mean, you know, by that I mean, how much strategy goes into the way you strike, wrestle, and pace yourself generally?
You know, a lot of after work load I have. You know, the grappling, unfortunately, I'm not a super explosive, I've never been super athletic or explosive, so I have to, you know, make judgments with what I have. And, you know, I've always been good with grappling, and my stand was vastly improved. You know, I don't have good stand-up, but I'm not out there getting punched too much. So I use my stand-up to, you know, cover the distance, close in, you know, land some strikes, and try to take them down and get them to the ground. It's my world.
Do you fight that way naturally, or have you developed that strategy over time?
I think a little both. Some of it's just like natural because, you know, I want to go out there and find a way to win. Like I said, I'm not as fast as some of these guys. You know, sometimes they can't, you know, fight there, so I have to adjust to make examples of where I can win.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we've noted before, you had some fans calling for you to open up and try to finish more. Do you ever feel pressure to modify the way you fight based on what other people, like promoters and fans, say?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, that's why my last fight, I really wanted to go out there and make an example and just finish no matter what. And it definitely puts pressure, so I was willing to take some more risks, and luckily it paid off.
Yeah, and I like the way that you've stuck to your strategy over the years and kept fighting basically in a way that's most beneficial to you. I mean, lots of us appreciate what you do and don't, you know, do during the fights.
Yeah, I'm not going to go out there and just trade random punches and get knocked out half my fight, you know, and end up with brain damage. It's, yeah, it might be crowd-pleasing, but I'm not going to go out there and win one, lose one, and just take all that damage because, you know, a few of the fans want to see you trade a lot of punches.
That's a good point. And, you know, and not every fight out there needs to end by someone getting brutally knocked down. And I salute you for flying the flag for technical fighters and probably overachievers as well, Jake. And you're not just a technical fighter. I mean, I'd also say you're one of the most underrated tough guys in the sport in terms of recovery and perseverance. I mean, we've seen you get hit with huge shots.
Yeah, I definitely got a lot of mental toughness, and I'll never stop trying. But, you know, I've been rocked a few times. You know, guys like Dan Henderson have put me down. I've been able to get my head back together and come back and win that. And I'll never quit in a fight. I'll always keep going.
Yeah, and the way you can go from being, you know, almost out of there to on top and crushing opponents still shocks me every time. What is your thought process when you get hurt in a fight and you need to hang on and survive?
I don't think there's too much going on. It's just you're just like, don't quit, keep fighting, you know? Like, the worst in Rock was Henderson, you know? I was up fully dropped, and I couldn't really see straight, and I just see a couple things. He was coming out trying to finish me, and I'm just thinking, I knew I just had to keep moving. So if I stopped, the ref would... I stopped moving, the ref would stop the fight. So I was thinking, just move, and then slowly, as the head starts coming back together, that's when you start thinking, all right, now I got to put the pack back together.
Can you describe what goes through mentally during those moments of adversity? I mean, how you almost managed to make it through?
It's tough, you know. You're not feeling good. You're rocked. You're hurt. You're, you know, tired. You feel sick. But all you think is just, you got to just get through the minute, you know, just keep trying to move and wait for the guy to hopefully slow down and your head come back together, and then hopefully you can start putting attack back at him.
Does it help having been there before? I mean, can you remember times when you were hurt and persevered during a time when you're in trouble, or you know, do you just go on instinct?
Yeah, I think for instinct. I don't know if it really helps. I think you either can do it or you can't. You know, some guys can. You build the toughness too. I mean, I guess it's both. You can build toughness for sure in training, but it's. You know, it's something you either have or you don't. I think some guys just aren't quite able to push those really tough moments.
Yeah, and that's why someone like Lombard had to change up his game and not try to finish you, I'm thinking. I mean, opponents now should know that you're never out of the fight until the referee steps in and waves it off. What would you say was the closest you were to being finished in a fight that you won?
That I won? The Dan Henderson fight. You know, I was rocked really hard. He hit me with an overhand right, and I just fully collapsed. And I remember just looking up and seeing him over me and just being like, oh, crap, I better do something. And that was right after he knocked out Bisping with that flying Superman punch. And I'm just thinking, oh, man, don't want him to give me one of those.
You also gutted it out in a deep choke against Mayhem Miller, which some people claim would have finished you if the bell didn't ring. What's the story with that one? How close was that choke to the finish?
Yeah, I didn't feel like it was that bad. Actually, I'm really comfortable with the choke. So I had that blocked off. I believe, you know, there's no certainties. You can't guarantee anything, but I believe I would have escaped that outline. But like I said, we'll never know since we didn't get the time.
Well, you know, you've been there so many times before, so, you know, it's like, even though it was a deep choke, there's nothing, you've done it before.
Exactly. It was a deep choke, and I feel like Mayhem doesn't quite have the ability to finish me. You know, if it was someone like Marcelo Garcia, my back choked me, and yeah, I'd probably be done, but Man, I don't think he had it quite in right. I still felt comfortable.
And you beat him pretty easily after that. I mean, you have so many good wins that I'd say your status as one of the top non-UFC fighters is undeniable. I mean, in fact, a cynical person might say it's inevitable that they'll want you back there in the future eventually if you keep on winning.
Yeah, you know, at this point, I take one fight at a time. I'm not sure if I want to go back to UFC or not. But, you know, certainly wouldn't want to close any doors and create any problems with them. But at this point, I've just got... Taking it one fight at a time and seeing where my career goes.
How would that make you feel knowing that they cut you on a good streak and then asked you back potentially?
I mean, it is what it is. It's business, you know. So if it made sense for me businessly and financially and I wanted to do it, I'll go back. You know, you're not going to be thrilled about things. But if it benefits both of us, then it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of behavior is almost like a manipulative ex who wants to hook up again as soon as they see you acting happy with another person.
Yeah, exactly. but you don't date her again, but hey, sometimes you can still fuck her.
Of course. Hey, for the time being...
You realize what the relationship is.
Yeah, that's a good point. Before we let you go, let's tell people where they can keep up with you on social media and so forth.
Twitter, of course, Jake Shields, AJA. My Instagram is Jake Shields, and Facebook, I guess that's... on all three of those. Oh, yeah, and Score. I mean, posting a lot of stuff through the Score now, so...
Well, Jake, it's been great. We've been following your career for so many years and look forward for you to doing the same thing, continuing to fight at a high level and winning championships. All the best of luck to you against Brian Foster. Hopefully we can get you back on here for an update sometime in the future.
Awesome. Good talking to you.
Take care, Jake. Thank you.
Thank you.